lay on the tables or splayed on the sloping floor, heads down toward the drains. He would handle them, move them around. Ragdolling, they called it. Would lean them up against the wall so he could talk to them while fussily arranging and rearranging their limbs. Dominica imagined the dirty smocks, the purple necks, the... "It seems like we're always sitting here, you and I," said Vanya brightly. Dominica cleared her head of the cellars. She saw Vanya's yellow halo, bright and broad. This would be an interesting meeting. "It's good to see you again." "Thank you," she said quietly. She braced herself. "I'm pleased to hear that General Korchnoi offered you a seat in the Americas Department." "Oh, get on with it," she thought. "When Colonel Semyonov released me from the 5th, I had no office. I'm grateful to the general for the opportunity," Dominica said. "Korchnoi told me he was impressed with your work against the Frenchmen," said Vanya. "Despite the fact that the operation was unsuccessful," said Dominica. "We all have our successes and failures," said Vanya, bathed in yellow, acting sweet. Dominica's voice rose a little. "The operation against Delon would still be progressing if the 5th Department had not acted prematurely. We could have developed the penetration of the French Defense Ministry." "I read the file. There was promise. Why did we not?" interrupted Zhuganov mildly. Dominica willed her eyes not to grow large as she saw the parabolas of black unfold from behind Zhuganov's shoulders like bat wings. "Shaitan," thought Dominica. "Pure evil." "You'll have to ask the chief of the 5th Department," said Dominica, not looking into Zhuganov's eyes, not wanting to see what lived behind them. "Perhaps I will," said Zhuganov. "Enough. There's no value in recriminations. Corporal Igorova, it is not your place to question the decisions made by senior officers," said Vanya mildly. Dominica kept her voice level, and her eyes never left her uncle's. "This is why the service is struggling to exist. This is why Russia cannot compete. Attitudes like this. Officers like Semyonov. They are krovopiutsi, attached to the belly, sucking blood, impossible to remove." There was silence in the room as they stared at each other. Zhuganov watched her face. His hands did not move on the arms of his chair. "What am I to do with you, niece?" said Vanya finally, getting up from his desk and walking to stand in front of the picture window. "Your record is strong. You should not jeopardize the career ahead of you. The manner in which you have spoken to me already is enough for your separation from the service. Do you wish to continue your complaints?" "And think about your mother," thought Dominica. "And think about your mother," said Vanya. "She needs your support." "I'm taking advantage of our relationship, I know," said Dominica. "But our work is too important to let it be done stari nish, in the manner it has always been done." She turned to watch her uncle at the window and knew two things. Vanya did not care about any of this. He had another agenda that involved her, and she had some latitude in her comments. She also knew Zhuganov was drinking her words in. She could feel him radiating like a furnace. He was a creature that was not content unless he had prey. She did not look at him. Looking out the window, Vanya shook his head. "Welcome to the modern SVR," he thought. "Improvements, reforms, public relations, and women in the service. Junior officers could criticize the old ways." "So you do not like the old ways?" said Vanya. "I do not like to fail at an operation that could have succeeded, whatever the reason," said Dominica. "And you believe you are ready to manage your own operation?" said Vanya softly. "With guidance and advice from officers like you and General Korchnoi. And Colonel Zhuganov, of course," said Dominica. She forced herself to include the little cadaver lover sitting beside her. He turned his head toward her, jug-handle ears extended, and nodded. "Most would say you are too young, too inexperienced, but we shall see." Dominica noted the tone of Vanya's voice, the honeyed phrase before the knout. "The nature of the assignment I have in mind, unfortunately, will take you out of the Americas Department." "What is the assignment?" she asked. She would scream if he told her she would have to seduce someone. It is a foreign assignment, to a residentura to do real operational work, a recruitment operation. Vanya's own recollection of foreign operations was dim, but he spoke as if he relished it himself. A foreign assignment? Dominika did not know what to say. She had never been out of Russia. To Scandinavia. I need someone new, fresh, with those instincts you have displayed, he said. You mean with a man, she thought bitterly. He saw her eyes and put up his hand. I don't mean what you're thinking. I need you as an operations officer. That's what I want to be, said Dominika, to be a member of the service to work for Russia. Zhuganov spoke, his voice mild and oily, the words coal black. And so you shall. This is a delicate task which will require great skill. One of the most difficult tasks. You must destroy an American CIA officer. From his office, Maxim Volontov, SVR resident in the Russian embassy in Helsinki, watched Dominika walk across the hall to return the dun-colored file to the file room for the evening. Since she had arrived in the residentura from Moscow, Dominika would check out the file each morning and take it to a work area to read, usually writing in a notebook, taking notes. At the end of each day, she would return it to the file clerk per established residentura practice. Besides Volontov, Dominika was the only officer allowed to check out this particular file. It was a copy of the SVR Papka on the American CIA officer Nathaniel Nash, transmitted from Yasenyevo. Volontov noted the dancer's legs, the body beneath the tailored shirt. Volontov was 55 years old, warty and stout, with a silver-gray 1950s Soviet pompadour. He had one steel tooth in the back of his mouth, visible only when he smiled, which was never. His suit was dark, baggy, and shiny in places. If modern spies today are made of space-age composites, Volontov was still steel plates and rivets. Dominika observed with interest the orange haze of deceit and careerism around his bullet head. Orange different from the yellow-tinted walruses back home. But he had been around for many years during the really difficult times in the KGB and was a protean survivor. Those specific instincts told him to handle the niece of SVR First Deputy Director Igorov carefully, even though it rankled. Plus, this young bombshell was here on special assignment, a sensitive one. After a week of preparation, Dominika tonight was to attend her first diplomatic reception, National Day at the elegant Spanish embassy, to see if she could spot the American Nash. Volontov would also be there, watching from across the room. It would be interesting to see how she would work the reception. Volontov's diesel-fueled thoughts turned to the excellent hors d'oeuvres the Spaniards always served. Dominika had been in a temporary apartment in the old quarter of Helsinki, hurriedly rented by the residentura per directions from Moscow, separated by design from the Russian embassy community, typically jammed into tiny apartments on the compound. Helsinki was a wonder. She had looked in amazement at the tidy streets, buildings with scalloped cornices, painted yellow and red and orange, and lacy curtains in the windows, even the shops. In the comfortable little flat, Dominika got ready for Spanish National Day. She put on her makeup, slipped into her clothes. She brushed her hair. The brush handle felt hot in her hand. For that matter, she felt hot, ready for battle. Her little flat was awash in undulating bars of color, red, crimson, lavender. Passion, excitement, challenge. She reviewed what she had been instructed by Volontov to accomplish with the American. This first night, establish contact. In the coming weeks, arrange a follow-up, then regularize encounters, develop bonds of friendship, build trust, uncover his patterns and movements. Get him talking. She had been briefed in the center. Before she left Moscow, Zhuganov had spoken to her briefly. Corporal, have you any questions? He asked. Without waiting for her reply, he continued. You realize that this is not a recruitment operation, at least not in the classic sense. The primary goal is not foreign intelligence. He licked his lips. Dominika kept quiet and kept still. No, said Zhuganov. This is more a trap, a snare. All we require is an indication, active or passive, it doesn't matter, when and how this American meets his agent. I will do the rest. He looked at Dominika with his head tilted slightly. Do you understand? His voice grew silkier. Abdirit. I want you to flense the flesh from his bones. I leave it to you how to do it. He locked on her eyes. Dominika was sure he knew she could see colors. His own eyes said, read me if you can. Dominika had thanked him for the instruction and had hurried away. This Nash was a trained CIA officer. Even a single contact with him was going to require great care. But the difference was that this operation against the American was hers to manage now. It was hers. She put down the brush and gripped the edge of the vanity as she looked into the mirror. She stared back at herself. What would he be like? Could she sustain contact with him? What if he did not like her? Could she insert herself into his activities? She would have to determine the right approach to him quickly. Remember your techniques. Elicit, assess, manipulate his vulnerabilities. She leaned closer to the mirror. Resident Volontov would be watching. And the Buivoli in the center would also be observing the outcome, the buffalo eyes of the herd all turned her way. All right, she would show them what she could do. Americans were materialistic, vain, nicotine. The lecturers at the academy insisted that the CIA accomplished everything with money and technology, that they had no soul. She would show him soul. Amerikansky were also soft, avoiding conflict, avoiding risk. She would reassure him. The KGB had dominated the Americans in the 60s during Khrushchev's Cold War. It was her turn now. Her hands ached from gripping the vanity. Dominika shrugged on her winter coat and turned for the door. This CIA boy had no idea what was going to happen to him. The palatial ground floor public room of the Spanish embassy was brightly lit by three massive glittering crystal chandeliers. Rows of French doors lined one side of the room leading to the ornamental garden, but were closed against the late fall frost. The room was jammed full, and 100 images scrolled past Dominika as she stood on the low landing looking down at the guests. Business suits, tuxedos, evening gowns, bare throats, upswept hair, whispered asides, guffaws with heads held back. Cigarette ash on lapels, a dozen languages going at the same time, glasses wrapped with wet paper napkins. The partygoers circulated in a constantly changing pattern, the din of their voices a steady roar. Groaning boards were arranged along the outer margins of the room with food and drink. People were lined up three deep. Dominika forced herself to tamp down the kaleidoscope of colors to manage the overload. She wondered how she was going to catch sight of Nathaniel Nash in this herd. He might not even be here tonight. Minutes after she had entered the reception room, she had already been cornered by several older men, diplomats by the look of them, who leaned in too closely, spoke too loudly, looked too obviously at her chest. Dominika wore a muted gray suit with a single string of pearls. The jacket was buttoned with occasionally a hint of black lace underneath. Nothing slutty, Dominika thought, but sophisticated sexy. Certainly Scandinavian women could dress tardy. For instance, that statuesque blonde standing beside double French doors swelled out of her cashmere top, every terrain feature visible. Her hair was so blonde it was almost white, and she played with it as she laughed at something a young man said to her. The young man. It was Nash. She knew his face from 100 surveillance photos in his file. Dominika slowly made her way toward the French doors, but it was like pushing through evening crowds in the Moscow metro. When she got to the French doors, Miss Scandinavia and Nash were gone. Dominika tried looking for the woman's blonde head. The Amazon was half a head taller than everyone else in the room, but could not see her. As taught at the academy, Dominika walked clockwise around the outer edges of the reception room, scouting for Nash. She approached one of the buffet tables where resident Volontov was standing, his plate and his shovel mouth both brimming with tapas. He was making no attempt to talk to anyone. He popped a piece of tortilla española into his mouth, oblivious to the crowd around him. Dominika continued circling the outer edges of the room. She could see the broad shoulders of the big blonde surrounded by the delighted, sweaty faces of at least four other men, but no Nash. Finally, Dominika saw him in the corner of the room, near one of the service bars. Dark hair, trim figure, he was dressed in a dark blue suit with a pale blue shirt and a simple black tie. His face was open, his expression active. "He has a dazzling smile," Dominika thought. It radiated sincerity. She stood close beside a column in the ballroom, casually enough, but unobserved by the American. What was most remarkable, what surprised Dominika the most, was that Nash was suffused with a deep purple, a good color, warm and honest and safe. She had seen it around only two other people before, her father and General Korchnoi. Nash was speaking to a short, balding man in his 50s with a bulbous nose who she recognized as one of the translators in the Russian embassy. What was his name? Trentov. Titov. No, Tishkov. The ambassador's translator. Spoke English, French, German, Finnish. She edged closer, using the crowd at the bar as cover, reached for a glass of champagne. She heard Nash speaking excellent, unaccented Russian to the sweaty Tishkov, who was holding a water glass half full of scotch. He was listening to Nash nervously, giving him fitful upward glances, nodding his head occasionally. Nash even talked like a Russian, his hands opened and closed, pushed the words around in the air. Remarkable. Dominika sipped from her champagne glass and moved closer. She watched Nash over the rim of her glass. He stood easily, not crowding Tishkov, but leaning forward to be heard over the din of the room. He was telling the little potato the story of a Soviet citizen who parked in front of the Kremlin. A policeman rushed over to him and yelled, "Are you crazy? This is where the whole government is." "No problem," said the man. "I have good locks on my car." Tishkov was trying not to laugh. From the other end of the buffet, Dominika watched Nash fetch another scotch for Tishkov. Tishkov was now telling his own story, holding on to Nash's arm as he spoke. Nash laughed, and Dominika could actually see him applying the force of his charm on the man. Attentive, charming, discreet, Nash was putting Tishkov at ease. "He's a spy," thought Dominika. Dominika looked beyond Nash and Tishkov at Volontov halfway down the room. The warthog resident was oblivious to a textbook encounter between an American intelligence officer and a potential target. Nash looked up for a second and quickly scanned the room. Their eyes met and caught for a beat. Dominika looked away, and Nash quickly turned his attention back to Tishkov. He didn't register seeing her, but in that split second, Dominika felt a jolt. The first time electric zing of seeing your target up close. Her quarry. They used to call them the main enemy. Dominika eased back behind the column and watched the American. Fascinating, that easy standing attitude. The younger man was keeping the older Tishkov interested. Confident but not boorish or swaggering, nothing like her former colleagues in the fifth. Simpatichny. Her earlier nerves about making contact, about engaging with the American, evaporated. She itched to approach him right then, get into his space, into his head, as she had practiced with Mikhail in Moscow, using her face and figure to get his attention. A simple matter of edging closer, a quick introduction. "No? Calm yourself. With Tishkoff around, Dominika would not approach him. Instructions from the center regarding Nash were specific. Contact must be private, unofficial, and no one in the embassy was to know, save Volontov. She would stay professional, exacting, calculating. It was what the operation required, and she was not going to deviate. To meet him, Dominika needed a better strategy than simply planning to attend all the diplomatic functions in Helsinki for the next calendar year. Several days later, fate supplied Dominika the opportunity she needed, at a venue she could not have predicted. Despite a modest street entrance under an unassuming neon sign, the Jurainkatu swimming hall in downtown Helsinki was a neoclassical gem built in the 1920s, located several blocks from the train terminal. Copper Art Deco lamps along a balustraded mezzanine above the elegant pool cast movie-set shadows on the gray marble pilasters and glimmering tile floors. Thanks to constant swimming therapy sessions at ballet school, Dominika was a strong and devoted swimmer. She began going to the pool a few blocks from her apartment as an outlet. She favored the noon hour. Going in the evenings was too dark, too cold. The walk home alone, too depressing. Besides, she was becoming increasingly lonely and fitful. Volontov, reflecting Moscow's impatience, was pressing her for progress on meeting Nash. He didn't care that engineering a plausible random bump on a target, even considering the smallish size of Helsinki, was not automatic. Dominika's breakthrough came when she was asked by Volontov to complete an urgent update report to Yasenyevo. She missed her noonday swim, so she went after work despite the dark and cold, and saw Nate come out of the men's locker room and walk around the edge of the pool, a towel draped around his neck. Dominika was sitting at the far end of the pool, legs trailing in the water, when she saw him. Without haste, she got up and moved closer to one of the marble pillars and watched him. He swam smoothly and powerfully. Dominika watched his shoulders bunch and flex as he plowed through the water. Dominika fought down her nervousness. Should she take the plunge, literally and figuratively? She could wait and report to Volontov that she had discovered one of Nash's patterns and that she was moving ahead with plans to establish contact, but that would be viewed only as a delay. She should move now, this instant. Throw the operation into action, they had said at the academy. This was a perfect chance for a first contact that would seem random and uncontrived. Move. Dominika was wearing a modest one-piece racing suit and a plain white swimming cap. She slipped into the water and slowly made her way across several lanes to the one beside Nate's. She began swimming slowly down the lane, letting Nash pass her, then pass her again on the next length. She timed his third overtaking pass to occur at the end of the pool as Nate made a relaxed open turn and started another lap. Dominika began swimming to stay even with Nash, which she found she could do with ease. Neither was swimming very hard. Through her goggles, Dominika could see his body underwater, rolling rhythmically in a smooth freestyle. At the far wall, Dominika and Nate both touched at the same time and started the return lap to the deep end. By this time, Nate noticed another swimmer keeping pace with him. Looking underwater, he saw it was a woman, sleek in a racing suit, stroking smoothly and strongly. Nate dug a little harder to see if a dozen deeper pulls would draw him slightly ahead of the mystery swimmer. She stayed even, without apparent effort. Nate pulled harder, flexing his lats. She kept up. Nate increased his kick rate slightly and checked. She was still there. The wall was coming up, and Nate decided to go at it hard, nail a flip turn, and crank up his stroke rate to the opposite wall. Let's see if she can hit a turn and finish with a sprint. He took a breath as he came up to the wall. Nate's legs came over his shoulders, his feet slapped explosively on the tiles, and he came off the wall clean and hard, ready to motor. He cycled his arms, elbows high, driving, pulling, the metronome chop, chop, chop of them entering the water, filling his ears. He cranked up his kick and felt the lift of the bow wave around his head and shoulders. Smooth and fast, he limited breaths to one side, away from the girl. There would be plenty of time when he touched to wait for her to come churning up to the wall. For the last 5 yards, Nate stretched and glided, turning on his side to face in the girl's direction. But she was already there, her wake hitting the wall as he touched. She had touched him out. She looked over at him as he stood up in the shallow end, peeled the cap off her head, and shook her slightly damp hair. "You swim beautifully," Nate said in English. "Are you on a team?"
"No, not really," said Dominica.
Nate took in her strong shoulders, elegant hands holding the wall, plain short nails in those blue eyes, electric wide. Nate had pegged her accented English as Baltic or Russian. There were a lot of Finns who spoke English with a Russian accent. "Are you from Helsinki?" asked Nate.
"No, I'm Russian,"
said Dominica, watching his face for a reaction, for contempt, dismissal. Instead, there was the brilliant smile. "Go ahead, Mr. CIA," she thought. "What will you say now?" "I saw the Dynamo swim team compete in Philadelphia once," said Nate. "They were very good, especially in the butterfly." The water of the pool sloshed over his shoulders, reflecting his purple haze. "Of course," said Dominica. "Russian swimmers are the best in the world." She was going to say, "as in all sport," but kept quiet. Too much, she thought. Settle down. All right, contact made. Nationality established, now set the hook. Tradecraft from the forest. She moved to the ladder to climb out of the pool. "Do you come here in the evenings?" Nate asked when Dominica said she had to go. The muscles in her back flexed as she climbed up the ladder. "No, my schedule is irregular," said Dominica, trying not to sound like Garbo. "Very irregular." She searched his face. He looked disappointed. "Good. I don't know when I will be back, but perhaps we'll meet again." She felt his eyes on her as she climbed out of the pool and walked into the women's locker room. As it turned out, Dominica and Nate met again at the pool 2 days later. She nodded noncommittally to his wave. They swam more laps, swimming side by side. Dominica played it slow, indifferent. She was correct, reserved, a conscious counterbalance to his shambling American informality. She constantly told herself not to be so nervous. When he looked at her, she knew from his expression that he was unsuspecting. "He doesn't know what this is," she thought with a thrill. "The CIA officer doesn't know who he's up against." When it was time to go, she again got out of the pool without delay. This time, she looked back at him, an unsmiling wave. That was enough for now. Over the course of several weeks, they met 5 or 6 times, and not one of them was by chance. Dominica had cased the Torney Hotel, diagonally across the street from the pool entrance. Most evenings, Dominica would be in the sitting room at the window observing his arrival. As far as she could tell, he never was accompanied by anyone. He was surveillance-free. Dominica tried to build momentum in minute and undetectable stages. As they continued meeting at the pool, it was natural that they introduced themselves. Nate said he was a diplomat in the American embassy working in the economic section. Dominica said she was an administrative assistant in the Russian embassy. She heard him recite his cover legend and gave her own. "He's very natural," thought Dominica. "What sort of training do they get?" Typical trusting American, incapable of a true conspiratia. He looked at her without guile, his purple halo never changed. "God, she's serious," thought Nate. "Typical Russian, afraid of putting a foot wrong." But he liked her reserve, her underlying sensuality, the way she looked at him with her blue eyes. He especially liked the way she pronounced his name, Nate. But he gloomily told himself she could not have access to secrets. Come off it, she's just a beautiful Russian embassy clerk. 24, 25, Muscovite, Foreign Service, Junior Admin. Remember to get the patronymic and family name off the registration card at the pool. To have gotten out of Moscow this young, she probably has a sugar daddy. Not hard to believe, looking at that face, the body underneath the spandex,
unattainable. Nate decided to send in traces, just for form's sake, but knew he'd be moving on. This was not a honey trap against a hapless European on her home turf, Dominica told herself. This was an operation in the foreign field against a foreign intelligence officer. She was center-trained. She knew she would have to reel him in carefully. She had filed an initial contact report to Yasenyevo, detailing the first few contacts. Volontov was pressing for forward movement. A couple of weeks, no response from Langley on the trace cable. Typical, but who cares, thought Nate. It was enough to meet her occasionally and drink in that face. He had gotten her to smile twice. Her English was good enough to get a joke. He wasn't going to spout off in Russian and scare her. One evening as they finished swimming, they turned to climb the ladder to get out of the pool. They bumped into each other. Her suit clung to her curves. Nate could see her heartbeat beneath the drum skin of spandex. He offered Dominica his hand, climbing up the ladder. Her hand was strong, hot to the touch. He held it for a beat and let go, face impassive, no reaction. He held her eyes for another beat. She took off her swim cap and shook her hair. Dominica knew he was looking at her, kept calm, distant. What would he say if he knew she had been trained as a sparrow? If he knew what she had done with Delon and Ustinov? She would not, absolutely not, seduce him. She would hear the cackles all the way from Moscow. No, she was going to accomplish this with discipline, with cleverness. Move it forward, she thought. Time to start opening the human envelope, to shake up that frustratingly consistent purple mantle. Dominica said yes to Nate's suggestion that evening that they stop for a glass of wine in a neighborhood bar. His face had lit up with surprise, then pleasure. Seeing each other in street clothes on the sidewalk seemed strange. Dominica sat firmly on the other side of the little table, nursing a glass of wine. Now, elicitation. Where are you from in the United States? Do you have brothers and sisters? What does your family do? She was going down the list, filling in the blanks in his papka. If Nate didn't know better, this would have sounded like a debriefing. Maybe she's just nervous, deflecting questions about herself. When Russians aren't being intense, he thought, they're being obtuse. Well, let her relax. He was not going to spook her by going in too hard. Spook her from what? He asked himself. She wasn't a target, and he wasn't going to bet her. He ordered black bread and cheese. Very clever, she thought. He thinks that's all we Russians eat. A second glass of wine? No, thank you. It was Dominica who finally said she had to go home. Nate asked if he could walk her home. At the front door to her small, modern apartment block, she saw him wrestle with the enormousness of leaning in for a peck on the cheek. She watched him trying to decide, men are all alike. Then gave him her hand, shook his once firmly, and went inside. Through the glass door, she saw him turn away, hands in his pockets. The trained SVR intelligence officer, graduate of Sparrow School and the AVR, congratulated herself on a good evening, good progress, especially how she had cut him off from that kiss. Then she laughed. Some courtesan you are, she thought. The slayer of gangsters, the seducer of diplomats, and now Otkazatusha, denying a goodnight kiss. Hey, Romeo, said Forsythe, leaning into Nate's small office in the station. Did you see the incoming from headquarters this morning on Esther Williams? Forsythe was referring to the results of the name trace request Nate had cabled in on Dominika Igorova. DPOB 1989, Moscow. OCC, Administrative Assistant, Russian Embassy. He had drafted the cable more than a month ago. Nate expected that there would be no HQ's traces on the woman. She wasn't even on the local dip list. She had told Nate she held a junior admin rank, the absolute bottom. The rest of Nate's cable vaguely outlined a contact based on periodic meetings at the swimming pool. Totally useless, no access, no potential.
No, I haven't seen the cable, said Nate. Is it on the reading board? Here's my copy, said Forsythe. Take a look at this. Forsythe chuckled as he handed the cable to Nate. As Nate started reading, Gable appeared behind Forsythe.
Has Tommy Fuckfaster read the traces? Said Gable.
He, too, was laughing. Nate didn't look up and continued reading. Traces on subject ref indicate confirmed status as SVR corporal and possibly Directorate 1, Computer and Information Dissemination. Approximate SVR EOD date 2007-2008. Graduate of Foreign Intelligence Academy, AVR, 2010. Probable family connection to SVR First Deputy Director Ivan Vanya Dmitrovich Igorov. Subject posting to Finland not reflected in Russian Federation Foreign Ministry lists, suggesting TDY status and or specific operational assignment of limited duration. Headquarters comment. Reference contact is of interest to HQs. Subject's family tie to SVR leadership arguably provides her with unique access and represents an opportunity for significant recruitment. Applaud station diligence in aggressive spotting and developmental activity. Encourage station officer to pursue subject for additional assessment and development. HQ standing by to support station ops plan as required. Regards. Nate looked up from the cable at Forsythe and Gable.
You can't get a better trace response than that, said Forsythe. This could work out to something big if you can take it all the way to recruitment.
Nate could feel cement filling his legs. This feels wrong, Tom. She's not plugged in, she's too junior. Remains to be seen whether she's recruitable. There's something distant and closed up about her. He looked at the cable again. Women haven't been allowed into the academy for the last 50 years. I could waste 6 months trying to develop her for nothing. I think I should concentrate elsewhere. Gable leaned farther into the room past Forsythe's shoulder.
That's right, think it all through, he laughed. Are you fucking kidding me? A knockout like that plus a close relative to someone on the top floor of the SVR? You better check it out good and hard. Never mind going after someone else. This is a fucking ripe plum just waiting to get plucked.
I get it, said Nate. It's just that she doesn't seem like the type who's an SVR operator. Dour and scared, at least that's my assessment. He shrugged and looked at the other two.
Well, assess away, kiddo. You got yourself a solid developmental prospect, said Gable as he left the office. Let's talk ops plan when you're ready, he said over his shoulder.
Forsythe turned to leave, gave Nate a wink. Nate looked at Forsythe and nodded. Okay, let's see where this goes, he told himself. A waste of time. Come on, get motivated. From right now, Dominika Igorova was something more than a beautiful face. She was his development target. Up the road from the U.S. Embassy and the Russian Embassy, Resident Voluntov was haranguing Dominika on the slow progress of her operation. Corporal Igorova, you have made a good start, but your progress has been too slow. General Igorov has sent 3 requests for updates since you arrived. You must redouble your efforts to move your friendship with Nash forward. More frequent meetings, ski trips, weekend trips, be inventive. General Igorov once again recommends that you cultivate in Nash an emotional dependency on you. Voluntov sat back in his chair and ran greasy fingers through pomaded hair.
Thank you, Colonel, said Dominika.
Her uncle, Semyonov, and now this smelly throwback. Can you tell me, please, what Director Igorov means by emotional dependency? Her level gaze dared him to suggest she seduce the American.
I'm sure I cannot speak for the deputy director, said Voluntov, swerving away from the washed-out bridge of their conversation. All you need to focus on is to move the relationship forward. Develop bonds of trust.
Voluntov waved his arm in the air to illustrate what bonds of trust might mean. Most important, get him talking about himself.
Of course, Colonel, said Dominika, getting up from the chair. I will push forward and keep you informed. Thank you for your valuable guidance.
After her session with Voluntov, Dominika was deflated. He operated in a puerile, slimy world of sly hints, insinuations, bonds of trust, emotional dependency, Sparrow School. Would she have to deal with that her entire career? Walking home, Dominica thought furiously. Snap out of it. She was on assignment in a foreign country, living in her own apartment in a fairy tale little city. It was wonderful. She had an important job to do against a trained American intelligence officer. Well, he did not seem dangerous, but he was a CIA officer, and that was enough. Tonight she'd get him to talk more about himself. She'd ask him what he thought of Russians. He had not yet admitted he spoke the language. She would get him to talk about Moscow. He had to admit to his posting there. As she walked quickly down lighted streets toward Yerankatu, unaware that her limp was more pronounced, she looked forward to the contact. Walking toward Yerankatu himself, Nate was thinking hard, so preoccupied that he realized he was oblivious to the street, that he was ignoring his six. Wake up, sport, he thought. This is the first night of your new case. He used a red light to cross the street and change his directional flow to catch a look as he watched for traffic. No hits, no casuals. Walk three more blocks and do it again. No repeats. This is no longer a splashy fun romp with a blue-eyed Slav in wet spandex. No. If she was an SVR officer, and he still doubted it, he'd have to pay attention and do some more assessment. God, he'd rather be working that drunk Tishkov. At least he'd have access to documents and the minutes of private meetings. That would be a real scalp. Something that would start a buzz back home. Also, lost in thought, Dominica likewise neglected to check for surveillance until she was three blocks from the pool. To atone for her inattention, she did a preposterous reverse in an alley. The pensionerki would have howled and felt ridiculous. As both of them absent-mindedly flailed away on the street, they turned to different corners and arrived at the front door of the swimming hall at the same time. Dominica's breath quickened, Nate's pulse increased, but they both remembered what each had to do to the other and got down to work. Dominica leaned back against the wooden partition of the booth. Long fingers slowly twisted the stem of her wine glass. Nate sat across from her, legs extended and crossed at the ankle. He was dressed in a V-neck sweater and jeans, she in a blue cable-knit top and pleated skirt. She wore dark tights and black low-heeled shoes. Nate noticed she bounced her foot under the table. Americans never take things seriously enough, said Dominica. They're always making fun. How many Americans do you know? Asked Nate. Have you been to the United States? There was a foreign student, an American boy, at ballet school, said Dominica. He was always joking. She did not mind mentioning ballet. It was part of her legend. But he was a good dancer? Asked Nate. Not especially, said Dominica. The program was very difficult, and he did not apply himself. Must have been lonely for him, said Nate. Did you show him around Moscow, go drinking together? No, of course not. It was forbidden. Forbidden? Which part, drinking or making him feel welcome? Said Nate, looking at his wine glass. Dominica looked at him for a second, then averted her eyes. You see, always making jokes, she said. It's not a joke, said Nate. I just wonder what he will remember about Russia, about Moscow. Will he have fond memories of the city, or will he remember only being lonely, unloved? What a strange thing to say, thought Dominica. What do you know about Moscow? She asked, already knowing part of the answer. I lived there for a year, I think I told you before, working in the American Embassy. I lived in the housing compound next to the Chancery. No interest, no inflection. Did you like it? She asked. I was always busy, not enough time really to explore the city. He took a sip of his wine and smiled at her. I wish I had known you, though. You could have shown me around, unless it was forbidden. Innocent little boy, she thought. What an act. Dominica ignored the comment. Why did you leave after a year? I thought diplomats stayed longer than that. His answer would be the lead sentence of her report. There was a sudden vacancy in Helsinki, said Nate. So I made the change. Very smooth, thought Dominica.
She noted that the purple around his shoulders did not change when he did not tell the truth. Very professional.
"Were you sad to leave?" asked Dominika.
"In some ways, yes," said Nate, "but I feel sad for Russia as well."
"Sad for Russia? Why?"
"We finished the Cold War without blowing each other up, came close a couple of times. Whatever you thought about the Soviet system, it was over. I think everybody hoped Russia would see a new day, freedoms, and better life for its citizens."
"And you think life is not better in Russia now?"
asked Dominika, trying to tamp down the indignation in her voice.
"In some ways, yes, of course," said Nate, shrugging. "But I think people still struggle. The cruelest outcome is seeing a new age dawning, but nothing coming of it."
"I do not understand," said Dominika.
"Let's see if she takes the bait," he thought.
"Don't take this the wrong way, but I think that your current leaders are creating a system as notorious as the Soviet system of the past. But it's not as evident. It's more modern, telegenic, plugged in. The new weapons are oil and natural gas, but behind the scenes there's just as much cruelty and repression and corruption as before."
Nate looked at Dominika sheepishly and raised his hand.
"Sorry, didn't mean to criticize."
Despite all the training and practice, Dominika had never before engaged with an American in such a discussion. She had to keep in mind that he was an intelligence officer, was adept at saying provocative things to elicit comments from her. She told herself to relax. This was no time for her to lose control. Still, she had to respond.
"What you say is not correct," said Dominika. "This is the sort of anti-Russian attitude that we are constantly aware of. It is simply not true."
Thinking about the renegade KGB officer poisoned by polonium and the journalist shot in her elevator, Nate finished his wine.
"Tell that to Alexander Litvinenko, or Anna Politkovskaya," said Nate.
"Or Dmitry Ustinov," thought Dominika guiltily. But she was still furious with him.
Spanish Embassy Tortilla Española. Cook seasoned medium-sliced potatoes and chopped onions in abundant olive oil until soft, then remove and drain. Add beaten eggs to potatoes and onions and return to oiled pan on medium heat until edges and bottom start to brown. Place plate over skillet, invert, then slide tortilla back into pan and cook until golden brown. Chapter 11. Nate sat in the station staring through the slats of the Venetian blinds on the window in his office. He absent-mindedly batted the cord of the blinds, making the plastic handle hit the wall and bounce back. Click, click, click. Last night had been another National Day reception at some embassy. The half-dozen calling cards on his desk amounted to squat, and there was a knot between his shoulder blades. The thought of swimming reminded him of Dominika. He had looked hard at her. They had been out several times, but he still thought the case was going nowhere. She was a believer, way committed, no doubts, no vulnerabilities. He was wasting time. The plastic at the end of the cord clicked against the wall. The cards on the desk mocked him. A single paper, his latest cable on contact with Dominika, lay in a metal tray on his desk. Gable stuck his head into his office.
"Jesus, the fucking prisoner of Zenda in the tower," he said. "Why aren't you out on the street? Take someone to lunch."
"I struck out last night," said Nate, staring out the window. "Four National Days this week alone."
Gable shook his head, walked to the window, and yanked the slats of the blinds closed with a snap. He sat on the edge of Nate's desk and leaned close.
"Bend over, Hamlet. I'm about to give you a pearl of wisdom. There is a perverse element to this human shit we do. Sometimes the harder you try to find a target, to start a case, the farther away it gets from you. Impatience, aggression, in your case depression, gets in the air like a whiff of sulfur. No one wants to talk to you, no one will dine with you. Sulfur in the wind. You smell like rotten eggs."
"I don't follow you," said Nate.
Gable leaned closer.
"You've got performance anxiety," he drawled.
The longer you stare at your pecker, the softer it's gonna be. Keep trying, but ease off the accelerator.
Thanks for the graphic image, said Nate, but I've been at station for a while and I have nothing to show for it.
Stop, or I'll start weeping, said Gable. The only guys you have to please are me and COS, and we ain't complaining.
Yet.
You got time, so keep going.
Gable picked up the cable in Nate's inbox.
Besides, this Russian sugar britches is gold waiting to be mined, your professional assessment notwithstanding. Get to work on her, for Christ's sake. I have an idea how we can blow air up her skirt for a better look.
Gable suggested they direct the small station surveillance team on Igorova to get a sense of what she was doing in Helsinki. Putting surveillance on her struck Nate as overkill. He had been trying to tell Forsyth and Gable that Igorova was a low-level target, an admin type with no access. Surveilling her was a waste.
Let's agree to disagree, Gable said. In other words, shut the fuck up.
Forsyth held up his hand. Nate, since you're the action officer with Igorova, why don't you handle the team while they cover her? Useful experience, and you can provide input. They're an interesting old couple. They're both sticklers for tradecraft.
Great, Nate thought.
Gable had made the suggestion to employ surveillance to kickstart the operation, and Forsyth assigned him to run the team to focus him on the case. Forsyth and Gable worked well together, real pros. They knew how to motivate their officers. Gable slid the file to him, daring him with a look to say anything.
Here's the file on Archie and Veronica.
He paused for a beat.
These two are legends. They've been working since the 1960s. Worked some shit-hot ops over the years, including Galician's defection. Tell them I said hello.
24 hours later, after a 2-hour vehicular SDR that took him north for an hour on the E-75 and then west on secondary roads and back into the city on the 120, Nate ditched his car in public parking at the Pasila train station and walked into Lansi Pasila, a district of high-rises and commercial buildings. He found the right one, a modest apartment block of 4 stories of brick and glass with enclosed angular balconies. He pressed the intercom button marked Raikkonen and was buzzed in. Nate rang the bell at the door of the 4th-floor apartment.
Come in, said the elderly woman who opened the door.
Spry, in her 70s. Veronica. Her face was narrow and patrician, with a straight nose and firm mouth that hinted at what must have been considerable beauty in her youth. Her ice-blue eyes were still striking. Her skin was pink with good health. Her thick white hair was in a bun, and a pencil stuck out of it. She wore woolen pants and a light sweater. Reading glasses hung from her neck, and there was a pile of papers and magazines on the floor beside a chair.
"We've been eager to meet you," she said. "I am Jana."
She grasped Nate's hand and shook it firmly. She radiated vitality and energy. Her grip, her eyes, the way she stood.
"Would you like a cup of tea? What time is it?"
She checked her watch, which she wore with the face on the bottom of her wrist, a classic tell of a street surveillant, thought Nate.
"It's late enough to contemplate something stronger," said Jana. "May I offer you a schnapps?"
All this was said in a flurry of movements, gestures, smiles, twinkling eyes.
"Marty Gable sends his regards," said Nate.
"How kind of Marty," said Jana, clearing a space on a cluttered coffee table. "He's a dear. You're lucky to have him as a supervisor."
She was shuttling back and forth from the kitchen with glasses and an unidentified clear liquid that seethed in an oval bottle.
Schnapps.
"We've seen some strange chiefs over the years," she said, "on both sides. Of course, the Russians were uniformly worse, beastly clods trying to survive in their beastly system, bless them. They certainly provided us with interesting times."
Jana Raikkonen poured 2 glasses of schnapps, raised her glass in a Scandinavian toast, looking him in the eyes while taking the first sip. The living room was small and comfortable, with overstuffed furniture and bookshelves lining the polished wood walls. The house was filled with the smell of vegetable soup.
"Is your husband home?" asked Nate. "I hope to meet him, too."
He won't be long, said Yana. He was out on the street covering your arrival.
She shrugged. I'm afraid it's a habit with us.
Nate chuckled to himself. He had run a 2-hour dry cleaning route looking for a tail and had missed the old guy hanging around outside his building. That's how they've operated for so long, he thought. Just then a key rattled in the lock. The front door opened, and Marcus Raikkonen walked into the room. Archie. He led a tan dachshund on a leash, which, after sniffing briefly at Nate, trotted over to his bed and flopped down. His name was Rudy. Marcus was tall, over 6 feet, and broad across the shoulders. He had clear blue eyes under bushy eyebrows. Muscular cords stood out of the side of his neck, under a sharp jawline. He moved easily, athletically. He was balding and wore his remaining hair in a buzz cut. His handshake was firm. He wore a dark blue tracksuit with black training shoes. There was a small Finnish flag on the left breast of the suit.
Across the street in the courtyard? Asked Nate. The bench near the steps?
Good, said Marcus. I didn't think you noticed.
He smiled and picked up the third glass of schnapps.
To your good health, he said, draining the glass while looking Nate in the eyes. Nate remembered the summary file on them. Archie and Veronica had been the core of Helsinki Station's unilateral surveillance team for close to 40 years. Both were retired pensioners now. Archie had been an investigator in the Finnish tax administration, Veronica a librarian. They were effective simply because they mixed different looks on the street with an instinct about what the rabbit was going to do next. Of course, they knew the city and its metro system intimately. They had grown up as the city had grown. Dogged, discreet, and with the patience and perspective of a lifetime, they could work on a target for months without being burned. Their style of coverage was what Gable had called more of a wife's caress than a doctor's finger. Nate and the Raikkonens drafted a surveillance sked on Dominika, who they would cover irregularly but at carefully selected times, evenings after work, weekends, when something interesting was likely to occur. From afar, Nate watched them work. Knit caps, mittens, and parkas one day, business suits and umbrellas the next. Bicycles with tingling bells and Rudy on a leash. An indistinct gray Volvo compact. A motor scooter with a basket. Sometimes they walked together holding hands, sometimes apart. One day, Yana followed Dominika into a store using a walker. Archie and Veronica did it all. Trailing, surveillance, static. Leading, crossing, parallel, leapfrog. Nate met them again at their apartment after the first 2 weeks. They had taken a few photographs. Marcus summarized the results so far. His report was crisp, precise. Yana would occasionally interrupt with observations.
First, said Marcus, we are quite sure that up until now she has not detected or suspected surveillance.
He shrugged his shoulders. She is young, but we see considerable skill on the street. She does not resort to the usual tricks, and she moves well, takes advantage of her surroundings. I would say she is significantly above average on the street. She knows her way around already. We observed her using specific tradecraft only once, said Marcus, looking at Yana. She waits in the mezzanine of the Torni Hotel across the street from Yrjankatu's swimming hall to watch you arrive. She waits for a few moments after and then enters.
Marcus disagrees with me, said Yana, but I think she is not operational. She is not handling agents and is not involved in operational support to the residentura. She does not have a job to do.
Yana looked over to Marcus, waiting for the rejoinder.
Of course she has a job to do, said Marcus. It's just that we have not seen it yet. Give it time.
One thing is for sure, said Yana, ignoring Marcus. She is lonely. She goes straight from the embassy to her little apartment. She buys groceries for one. She walks alone on the weekends.
Have you seen any hint of coverage on her? Asked Nate. Is anyone from the residentura keeping tabs on her?
We think not, said Marcus. She is clear. We will keep looking for any indication that they are watching.